There was a song that came out appropriately in 1984. It was by this artist by the name of Rockwell. One of the lines in the song went, "I always feel like somebody's watching me." Well, Rockwell knew his stuff. Welcome. We're glad you're a part of the full story. I'm Ron Ropiak. Okay, so I talk with those who are younger than me, and they say they don't get it. They don't get why this bothers those who are a little bit older than them. Every single one of them says, what's the big deal? We know they're watching us. We know there's no privacy. That's just the way it is. Get over it. Some, though, thank goodness, take issue with that attitude. Today, we're going to talk about privacy or lack of it. And we're going to start today by talking with Michael Kwet. I was reading the New York Times a few weeks back and came across an article with the title, "In Stores, Secret Surveillance Tracks Your Every Move." Michael wrote it, and he's with us today. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing good. Good to be with you.
Same here. I should mention that you're joining us on Skype, and we appreciate your time. Michael, you're a visiting fellow at the Information Society Project at Yale Law School, and you're the host of the Tech Empire podcast. The article that you wrote, it was a great article, but it was very disturbing. Tell us what's going on when we go into some stores nowadays.
Okay, so some stores, but also some other locations like concerts, airports, the Mall of America, sporting arenas, they have what are called Bluetooth beacons. And these are little devices you can fit in the palm of your hand, and they emit a signal, which is an address that basically says, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And when you're walking by this Bluetooth beacon, your phone is scanning for Bluetooth signals. And this uses Bluetooth low energy, so it won't drain the living daylights out of your battery. And it can detect this little I'm here signal. And then if you have an app installed that is seeking to track your physical location, say for marketing purposes, then it can notify that your phone will notify that app, and then it can process the fact that you're near that beacon, and it can use that to push you a notification or to track that you were near this particular beacon so they know where you're going.
Wait a second. You're telling me that there's an app on my phone that does that, but I didn't put that app on there. Did I?
Well, this is part of the problem. So there are what one company calls carrier apps. So carrier apps would be an app that wants to do targeted advertising, and it may not be related to that particular store. So you might have a news app and walk into, say, an IKEA or a Walmart or wherever, and that news app will be able to take in that beacon signal and process it. Or it might be the store app itself. So you might be in Target or IKEA or whoever, and if you have their app installed on your phone, then that app also can process the beacon.
Yeah, but not to be a pain in the neck about this, but I didn't put that app on there. How'd it get on? So you're saying that if I go and if I download a news app that I think is just going to give me news, part of it, this other Bluetooth tracking device, maybe this beacon may be in there?
Right. So basically what the app maker will do is they will put what's called a software developer kit or an SDK, which is a little snippet of code that will go inside the app. And that is basically like third-party software that's running inside your app. So if you want to think about this, a lot of people know what web cookies are when you're browsing the internet. These are little things that are placed in your browser or on your computer to be able to track when you're going to that website. This is kind of like a web cookie for an app. And placing that snippet of code inside that app allows third-party marketers to be able to use technologies like Beacon to keep track of where you're going in the physical world.
I find it disturbing because this happens in restaurants too. If you walk in there and let's say you try to eat healthy, but let's say it's one of those days where I get an unhealthy cheeseburger and then someone is tracking that and says, well, you enjoyed that cheeseburger. You might like some apple pie after this. Is that what that's doing?
Well, that's one thing that they could do. They could send a notification to your phone. They could send you a coupon. They could do what they call retargeting. So when you leave the store, they can program sometime afterwards to send you a reminder to return or a little discount. They can even take this information and put it into an email that you get at a later point in time. One thing marketers don't want to do, apps don't want to do, is have your phone flooded with messages. So they learned very early that if all of a sudden you're getting messages all the time everywhere, then you're going to probably uninstall that app. So they're very careful and calculated as to whether or not they can, when they can time to place advertisements to your phone, to your email, or maybe they just want to determine that you saw an ad at an earlier point in time, and then within, say, 48 hours, you actually went to that store to see whether or not that advertisement is working.
You study this, you write about it, it's part of your livelihood. Do you think this is intrusive, or is this the way that it just is nowadays?
I think it's both intrusive, and I don't think that it's the way it has to be. One of the major problems here is that there's no sufficient transparency. So these companies are going to say, well, you know, people are notified or they're making an informed decision when they install the app because the app has terms and services. And if you read the terms and services when you install your app, it's, I don't know how many pages, sometimes they could be 20,000 words, right? Mm. And there's complex language, there's vague language. Generally speaking, nobody reads them. Studies have shown you'd have to spend hours a day to read all the terms and conditions for all the websites and apps you come across. And so basically the industry collectively overwhelms people into accepting this. And so if I'm using an app, I don't know what the heck is going on inside that app in terms of third-party services like this. Some of the stores I went to, I have a little app called the Beacon Scanner in my phone just to verify, you know, is Rite Aid, is Walmart, is Walgreens or Target, actually Best Buy, are they using these beacons? And I will go up to store managers, and a lot of times store managers don't know that they have beacons in their stores.
Really? So the people who run it don't even know it.
And some of them are disturbed by it, which is the interesting thing. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you say, well, first of all, why shouldn't people know? Why shouldn't a store put a sign out in the front and say, we use beacons to track, you know, that you came here and for marketing purposes? And why shouldn't apps be very upfront about this process? That's first of all. And second of all, why shouldn't there be an easy way to opt into it instead of by default opting in and then having to opt out? Why shouldn't this be something that people have to opt into, and they can segregate out the services of the app, like the news or the weather or whatever kind of app you're using, from the advertising? In other words, if I want to be targeted with location-based advertisements to make my advertisements supposedly more relevant to me, based on this kind of technology, then I should be able to choose whether or not I want that or not.
Sure, give us the choice.
But I still want to use the app.
Right.
Right, exactly.
They're making money, right? I mean, this all comes down to money.
Yeah, and you know, to me, what it goes to show you is, so for the listeners who might say, well, what's wrong with this? This is part of the way things are now. A lot of what these companies do is they run little experiments on people. So they have something they call A/B testing. And A/B testing means that they'll take maybe a few thousand people and they'll give them one kind of advertisement. And then they'll take a second group and they'll give them a second kind of advertisement. And it might be changing the color, or one has butterflies or whatever. And unfortunately, the way, you know, human groups work is that we do have very subconscious biases. And so what it means is they can run these little experiments on us just to try to, you know, see whatever they can do to get us to the store and to purchase that product. And in essence, they're taking advantage of our and manipulating our subconscious tendencies. And that's treating us like objects, you know, rather than people who, you know, if they knew this process was going on, probably wouldn't, I mean, not probably, they wouldn't to opt right. into this kind of behavior.
Right, exactly. And it sounds from what you're saying that the only way around this is turn your phone off or leave the phone in the car when you go to the store.
Well, I mean, there are other ways. First of all, Google and Apple make this a little bit more difficult than it should be. So Quartz ran an article early 2018, and you can't just turn Bluetooth off in the straightforward setting in Google. You have to turn off both Bluetooth and find a settings called Bluetooth scanning, or you have to turn off location history, which will disable functions that you want. So you're in this battle to constantly toggle on and off Bluetooth. Apple is the same thing. If you have that little drop down and you click on the button that has the Bluetooth logo, you're only disconnecting the devices. Apple, you have to go into the settings and actually shut off Bluetooth. And that, again, is you're in this, you know, do you want your AirPods on, et cetera, et cetera. More importantly here, a large part of this story really is actually about how Apple and Google created this system. And Apple is, you know, champions itself as a pro-privacy company, but they're the first really to market to create this. And, you know, free and open source software is part of this. Proprietary systems are like black boxes, and people can't know what's going on inside their apps if they can't read what the source codes. So if your app is like a kitchen recipe, it does a bunch of things that the code tells it to do. If the public can read that recipe, if it can see it and it can modify it, which is what free and open source software allows you to do, then you have more ability for the public to control and take those things in the recipe out that are tracking you. The reason I bring that up is because in the long run, this is about who owns and controls the way our software works.
Hmm. And I was thinking earlier today, it used to be that we were worried about Big Brother and the government and so on. And then, as you're saying, Google, Apple, Facebook, it seems that the government is nothing compared to them.
Yeah. And, you know, part of it, that's exactly correct. And the ability to profile you is something that also young listeners should worry about. This is not an issue that people are going to, I'm a big champion of people power, but people aren't going to get their pitchforks out and take to the streets over Bluetooth beacons. But what this will do is help raise consciousness about these kinds of practices, which without A, making an engineering technology not to do these, that take to collect this kind of data in the first place, but B, where you can't really engineer technology so easily to do that, to have regulations in place. I mean, this is why we have elected representatives to serve our interests. They need to also step in here because ultimately you can determine things about your health, you know, whether or not you go to gyms. The richer the profile that is owned about you, the more valuable it is to health insurance companies, to creditors, and so on and so forth. And without regulations, we're in a situation where we're going to that companies are going to know a lot about you, and for what? You know, what do you really gain out of that? I mean, it's not like you can't have apps and software and things to do, like, you know, your weather, your news apps, without having things collected about you when you really don't want it. So to me, the power of these corporations, this is a fight at the grassroots against the power of big tech. And it's not, you're right, it's not just 1984 in government. Surveillance is a part of getting people to do what they want them to do. And when it's these companies, it's ultimately manipulating and lining their own pockets. Okay. It is a serious problem.
It all comes down to money. Mike, I'm going to ask you one more question, then I'm going to bring in another guest. Look, is it going to make any difference if states, if the government passed laws against these companies? I mean, heck, they did. And I get more robocalls than ever. It's like emptying a rowboat with a teaspoon. Will it make any difference?
It could make a difference if the stipulations or the tenets of the bills are strong enough. Asking for informed consent and then leaving it so vague as informed consent, we're going to give you terms and conditions that are 20 pages long to read, and basically we can do what we want as long as you click OK. That's not going to work. Right. But if there are laws that are in place that basically outlaw or make it hard for any of these things, the kinds of practices to exist, that could do something for us. But that's the fight. Right. The big tech will step in and try to water down any regulations.
Michael Kwet's still with us, and we have two more guests joining us for a few moments. Justin Kappos is professor at the NYU Tandon School of Engineering and a member of the NYU Center for Cybersecurity. And John Bandler is a cybersecurity attorney and adjunct lecturer in the John Jay College Criminal Justice's Department of Security, Fire, and Emergency Management. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us on the air.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Kappos, we're giving up more of our personal information nowadays, and we certainly hope that the hackers don't get it. But at the same time, I read that you believe that there's a massive talent shortage in cybersecurity. So why should we trust that our information will stay secure if there aren't enough people to make it that way?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of problems with this. In general, it isn't so much you have to worry about a hacker breaking into some company and stealing information. It's the fact that you're just giving it freely away to different people all the time. I mean, a lot of times when you do something like, certainly you bring a smart home listening device into your home, or you install an app on your phone, even things like innocuous things like games, they often will track you. And so, you know, you should really be thinking as a consumer, when you think about installing an app, you should think about it like you're sending intimate pics to a partner of yours, only you know that that partner likes to share those pics with their friends and their friends of friends and everybody else. So you're taking a serious risk.
And nothing is given away, right? I mean, there's always a catch.
Yeah, if you're not paying for it, then you're the product. You may be the cow in the field thinking this is nice, the farmer takes care of me, but one day you're going to end up in somebody's hamburger patty.
Absolutely.
As a result of it.
You're going to be a nice little T-bone there. Professor, what should we do about this?
Well, so there's a few different things that can be done. There were some very nice things that were mentioned by Mike about a lot of the things you can do to do things like limit ad tracking on your iPhone or disable Bluetooth and related settings, location services, stuff like this. In general, it's very hard, though, for consumers to do more than to, be conscious of what they can do. Really, we need somewhere, we need our representatives to step up. GDPR was this amazing step that went in the right direction. And we've seen Vermont be the first state that's tried to do, I think, something moderately reasonable. But we need things like this that, regulations that will go and make companies have to act in a way that helps to protect consumer privacy.
John Bandler is an adjunct lecturer in the John Jay Department of Security, Fire, and Emergency Management, and he also is an author. He has a book out, Cybersecurity for the Home and Office, The Lawyer's Guide to Take Charge of Your Own Information Security. John, thanks for being with us. I'm intrigued by the title. How do I take charge of my own information security?
Ron, great to be here. Great question. And it starts with knowledge and people empowering themselves to learn. It may seem daunting at first, but, a marathon is done a step at a time. You eat an elephant a bite at a time, as they say. And I even have a chapter in the book on privacy threats. And, I start with the cybercrime threats because privacy, you can't have privacy if you don't have cybersecurity. if the criminals get your data, whether from you or from the company storing it. And then there's a continuum from those companies that are unethical and have terrible privacy practices to the companies that are doing their best to protect their consumer customers' privacy and comply with regulations. But to protect your cybersecurity, it starts with knowledge. You need to understand something about your devices and where your data is and your networks. And then you need to spend some time to review those settings, your privacy settings, your security settings. And it's a process. I have the concept of the security dial, and I borrowed this dial goes up to 11 from Spinal Tap. But a lot of people, their privacy and security is at zero because they haven't thought about it yet. You don't have to go to 11, but you got to think, how do I get to 1 today and maybe tomorrow get up to 2?
Professor Kappos, I know I only have you for a few more minutes, so I'm going to pose this question to you. And John, stand by because I know you're with us in the next segment. Professor, is the genie out of the bottle? As I mentioned at the top of the program, it seems that some of the younger generation don't seem to care that all this information is out there. And Michael, maybe you can join in on this too. And is this a generational thing? Is it something where the younger people seem to look at and say, look, it's the way it is, and we accept it?
Yeah, I do definitely think that there tends to be a bit of when you're young, you don't have the same concept of risk. I know I did all sorts of stupid things when I was underage, and you know I see my nieces and nephews also run around and have fun and things like this. But since you don't have this fully developed sense of what can go wrong, what are the potential problems, what like how to reason about these types of concepts, we as a society in general have put protections in place to try to protect children. And we've really failed by, having them grow up around and just be accustomed to this monitoring, which is so much around them and so pervasive in their lives that I think we've kind of, in many ways, caused them not to think of this and not to think of it as a choice, unfortunately.
So, Michael, is more regulation the way to go?
I think regulation is one way to go. I want to add to that that, we have schools. And so if we're talking about children, we can teach them these things in schools. We can also teach them how to use software that doesn't track them. We can teach them about DuckDuckGo, the difference between Firefox or Tor in Chrome.
Michael, just for those who don't know, what is DuckDuckGo? And I do know, but just explain, please.
So DuckDuckGo is a search engine, but it uses contextual advertisements. It doesn't do the profiling kind of targeted advertisement that Google does with Google Search. And, there's a lot of different software options that actually are out there. A lot of times it's coming from the free and open source software community. And children can be given these kinds of short essays and software to play around with in school so that they become empowered and educated. And lawmakers could look at children as they should be, as a special class of people who shouldn't be monitored from the time they're 5 years old.
John, I'm going to ask you to respond to this. And I think you brought it up that some people just don't seem to realize the value of information. So a few years back, I had to take my son to the doctor, and the nice lady behind the desk said, okay, can I have his social security number? And I said, why? And she gave me the reason. I said, I don't see any reason why you should have this number. And she goes, don't worry about security. She goes, we keep it. And she opened up her desk drawer and she goes, we keep those numbers stored right here. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, this is nuts. But in the meantime, so many people give out such information without thinking twice about it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, data has value. Information about us has value. Cyber criminals and identity thieves know that, and they'll steal it, sell it, use it for crime. And, of course, advertisers, marketers, businesses know that. Now, keeping data in a drawer is actually probably safer than electronically, because for someone to steal it from the drawer, They have to physically get to the drawer and open it, and there's not that many people in the world that will do that. But data stored electronically in the cloud, any cyber criminal anywhere in the world can try to steal it. And no, your guests made a lot of great comments, and I agree. I see three parts to addressing the privacy problem, and one is with the individuals, individual awareness, responsible, informed choices, teaching the younger generation. Another part is going to be responsible and thoughtful government legislation and regulation. And another part is going to be encouraging businesses to have good practices and on privacy. Privacy policies you could actually read and understand, and compliant with regulations.
Professor Capo, since I know you have to get going in a few moments, we are in the next segment going to be speaking with New York State Senator Kevin Thomas, and he is the one who is sponsoring the New York State legislation about privacy, which I read part of it is pretty amazing, and it goes even further than what is taking place in California. Do you have any thoughts about the proposed legislation?
Well, frankly, we need stronger regulation, and the fact that we have people in New York State that are stepping up to do this is obviously a major benefit. In general, we also need things that can actually pass and make it through. So, we both need something strong and something that has the kind of teeth that GDPR did, which is one of the reasons why I think it's been so successful. I would love to see something like that pass.
Do you think that the tech companies will shoot this down? Do they have so much power that it won't pass?
I think it's very hard to fight against them. They, in many ways, control the ways in which we disseminate information out through a lot of sources. So, and with the way that Citizens United and other things have had an impact on our election, it's I think difficult for things that are just sort of societal citizen good to make their way out when there's big corporate interests that can pump unlimited amounts of money in to advocate for the other side. So we'll see what happens. I think it's a very...
Michael Kwet, I know that you have to get going in 30 seconds. I've enjoyed the conversation. I hope that you can come back in the future. Can I just get some final thoughts from you, please?
Yeah, I think that this is a struggle that is going to have to take place in part at the grassroots level, because getting regulations that we know are actually possible is absolutely correct, but that's a function of how much people push their representatives. If we want the strongest of possible regulations, the grassroots are going to play a critical role.
Michael Kwet, visiting fellow at the Information Society Project at Yale Law School. Professor Justin Capos, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
John, hold on 1 second. We'll get to you in a moment. This is The Full Story on WSHU. We'll be right back. It's The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak, and we continue our conversation about you, your personal information, about your health, your money, how you live your life, and whether or not you have the right to keep that information private. There are some who believe that more laws are necessary to force companies to safeguard that information, which they're getting from their customers. One of them is New York State Senator Kevin Thomas. The senator represents the 6th District on Long Island, that's central Nassau County, and he's sponsoring the New York Privacy Act. Senator, we appreciate your time today. How are you, sir?
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Senator, I also want to tell you that still on the line with us is John Bandler. John is a cybersecurity attorney and adjunct lecturer in the John Jay College Criminal Justice's Department of Security, Fire, and Emergency Management. But, Senator, I said it the other week when I was studying the New York State climate change legislation. New York is now in some ways leapfrogging California, and it would appear to do the same thing under your Privacy Act. Can you tell us what it does?
Yes. So the New York Privacy Act is a very bold legislation, all right? And it basically says I mean, the core of it is, one, there's going to be a data fiduciary. Second, your information is yours unless you give permission to allow for it to be shared. And three, it's basically there to protect the user from any sort of like embarrassment in case, the company goes ahead and releases information.
It's very interesting because Michael Kwet, who was on with us for our first two segments, he was saying, I think what you just said, instead of us, the consumers, opting out, we would have the opportunity to opt in. We wouldn't be forced into these situations.
Yes, because most of us don't actually read the disclaimer, the terms and conditions that we say yes to when we download an app. This would allow the user to have the most control of their data than anything else out there.
Senator, where does this stand in the legislative process?
Right now, session is over. We're going to hold more hearings on this later this year, and we're going to have this back up and running in January when session starts.
I'm going to bring John Bandler in just a second, but Senator, you don't have a co-sponsor on this legislation. Is the bill too politically hot, too dangerous?
No. I got a lot of attention on this, even though it was a one-house bill. We do have a couple of interested parties in the Assembly who want to take it up because they believe this is very bold in terms of legislation that no one has seen around the country. It goes beyond what the European model does, and it goes beyond what Washington and California has done, especially with the whole data fiduciary aspect of it.
I'd like to get into that in just a moment from now. John Bandler, what are you hearing based out of New York? What are you hearing from the tech companies?
Well, it is definitely bold. It would, of course, impose a number of costs on a number of businesses. And, you know, maybe bold is what is needed. Definitely in our country, privacy and cybersecurity is a problem. If the federal government is not leading on that, maybe states need to. As an example, historical example, data breaches were happening all the time, but we didn't hear about them until California was the first with the data breach reporting requirement. And now that's why we hear about data breaches, because companies are required to notify and report on them. I think one concern businesses have is, do we want a 50-state solution on privacy and security where they need to look to the laws of 50 states and comply? I think that creates some confusion. But maybe this is an area where New York's leadership could spur a comprehensive privacy and cybersecurity solution for our country.
Senator, what about if you take it from the tech point of view and what John Bandler was just saying? Look, if we have to comply with 50 states, we're going to go broke here. Just everybody get together, agree on something, and come up with one set of rules that at least we know what to follow.
Well, I sympathize with the internet companies, but since the federal government is not actually doing what they need to be doing in terms of regulating these data brokers and these internet companies, states have to step up. Just recently, I saw an article in, I believe, Bloomberg News, where women's period tracking apps were monetizing on women, monetizing based on targeted advertising based on whatever they're putting on their apps. You know, there needs to be regulation here. We can't have an innocent-looking app sharing women's personal data and then internet companies basically coming out and saying, oh, it's just too expensive to do this. You know, they should be held responsible.
Senator, I know that you went and you met with a few of the tech companies as you were thinking about your bill and putting it together. Now that it is out there, what are you hearing from them?
Well, from them, they are particularly concerned about my data fiduciary aspect of my bill. The data fiduciary basically says, hey, you have a duty of loyalty to your customer versus your duty of loyalty to make as much money as possible for your shareholder. That's the concern that they have been bringing up over and over again, saying, oh, we just don't know how to comply with that. But if you look at a car manufacturer, they're doing this already. You know, they are producing vehicles that are strong and that meet safety regulations, and they're also making money for their shareholders. That's all I'm asking them to do. You know, secure that data. Don't share it unless you get permission to share it. You know, I don't think this is a very hard thing for them to do, but it seems that their business model is something that, you know, they want to make as much money as possible by sharing information without permission. And that's what I'm trying to regulate here.
John, it seems what the senator is saying is common sense. And it sounds as they would say decades ago, it would be a win-win.
Yes, sounds great. And I think there's a lot of great parts to it.
Uh-oh.
I think it also comes back to the individual awareness, making responsible, informed choices. And take Facebook as an example, and you look at some of their disastrous privacy issues they have had, and how many people still choose to use Facebook, maybe get their news from it, choose to voluntarily share so much information about themselves. And that a little bit is a trade-off. A lot of us expect these free services, Google search, free email, free LinkedIn, free Facebook. And, you know, is the consumer making a responsible, informed choice? Maybe, maybe not. But a lot of these things are free. The companies do need to make money somehow. And I do agree with the senator that legislation is needed. I wonder if this law turns that dial up to 11, and maybe it should be down to 10 or 9, but definitely very difficult issues we do need to address as a country and state.
Well, the speaker goes up to 11, so it has to be louder, right? Senator, does this go far enough?
Some advocates say it does not, but I would say my legislation right now, it does go far enough, and I think we can get a lot of good work done with this.
Senator, I have to ask you, do you use Facebook? Do you use Google? I mean, things like that. I'm just curious as to someone who is putting this together. What do you do to safeguard your own privacy?
I do not have a personal Facebook page. My staff monitors my political page as well as Instagram. We have our own, political page. It's nothing else. I don't share more than I need to share in terms of pictures or whatnot.
Does it bother you? And I don't know if you were able to hear the conversation that we had earlier in the program about these new Bluetooth beacons and going into stores and tracking your phone and so on. Does that upset you?
I was not listening in prior to this, but we are already emitting a lot of information. All right. Internet companies know where we are going. I mean, Google tracks you. So it doesn't surprise me if, you know, those kind of things are out there right now, getting information from all of us.
John, what do you do?
So I was always a very private person. But when you go out and start your own business, you have to have a LinkedIn account, and then you publish a book and they say you need a Facebook account and all of that. So I do that. I do think, you know, everybody is entitled to make their own choices about how much they share. But I do think it should be an informed choice. I can't tell you the number of people who don't realize their Facebook posts are visible to the entire world because they've never checked their privacy settings. So it's an interesting times we live in where we carry a tracking device with us 24/7 and we need constant access to the internet, our phone, website searching, and all of that. But I do think people would be well served by just a little more awareness about all that's happening.
Well, John, just in that same vein, I read an article the other week that says Google keeps track of, let's say I buy something on Amazon. Google scans Gmail, sees that I bought something, and then holds on to that information for, I believe it was around 6 years or so. Why they have all this information, I don't know, but they have it in their database.
Yes, so now Google and a lot of the other providers are making it more transparent for the user about what information is being collected and stored. So you can go into that console and see. And in fact, when they first turned on some of that visibility, it was scary to look that they were tracking my Google searches from 4 years before, and I was able to delete that. Now, why do they want that data? Because that information has value, and that is the trade-off, because we expect that we'll have free email, free calendar, free contacts, free cloud storage, and the trade-off is, like as your earlier guests alluded to, when the product is free, you are the product, and we kind of expect those free services, but they like to have that information.
Senator Thomas, are you worried that there's a new ruling class, if you will, in the country, and that the men and women who run these companies are exerting an incredible amount of power to do what they want to do?
Yes, I feel like we are going towards a future where our social media presence equates to the price that we pay for healthcare or the price that we pay for auto insurance or our credit score, for example, you know, based off of our social media presence. And we need to kind of tone that down. We need to regulate this before it gets out of hand. And yes, internet companies are pretty powerful, and we need to regulate them as much as possible so that our future isn't turned into, oh, you posted a picture 10 years ago, now you don't get auto insurance based off of that.
Right, and as any parent can tell you nowadays, how many of us tell our kids, don't post anything? Of course, they all look at us like we're crazy, but it's like, no, once you put it out there, it will be out there forever.
Yeah, I mean, in addition, like, you have kids posting things that they're going to regret as an adult. You know, children's privacy should come first as well.
Absolutely. John, do we have a new ruling class?
I don't know if we have a new ruling class, but things are certainly different than they were before, that, you know, data is so important. Like I said, we just expect instant access to all of this communication and data and social media feeds, and that's new. And I agree, we need to adapt to it. There needs to be responsible laws and regulations. And just want to point out one interesting thing. I call it the Murphy's Law of Technology, which is that if you don't want someone to find it, it will stay there forever, that post on social media. But if it's that data that's precious to you, good chance you will lose it. So yeah, that's the Murphy's Law of Technology.
Absolutely. Senator, it would seem to me that if a company wanted to really, really build trust, that it would get out in front of this issue. Is there a company out there that's doing this?
Not to my knowledge. Everyone wants to say that they are self-regulating themselves, and they don't want an outside force telling them what not to do. There could be a company out there, but I have yet to see someone who is taking that first step and saying, all right, a customer's information is the customer's information, and we're not going to share it for any other purpose than we collected it for.
John Bandler, is there any company out there that you see that's doing the right thing?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, it's a continuum, like I said, from the criminals to the unethical companies to companies that are trying to do the right thing. I think there are many companies whose practice is not to share customer information. I work with a nonprofit. We just updated their privacy policy, and, you know, that policy is there's no sharing unless, you know, required by law. And I think it depends on the business model of the company. Obviously, the business model of a company like Gmail, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they're providing that free service to learn about their users. So that's going to be monetized. And then you have the midway. I think Verizon got in some regulatory trouble because even though you pay Verizon a lot of money, they were also collecting data about your use of the system. So they had to walk back something they did. And then what I think they did is a rewards program that if you opted into the rewards program to have your data be tracked, you would get bonus. Hmm. So I think there's a whole continuum of companies.
Senator, we have about 15 seconds left. Final thoughts, please.
We need to regulate these companies because a future is going to be based off of our social media presence.
New York State Senator Kevin Thomas, John Bandler, cybersecurity attorney and adjunct lecturer in the John Jay College Criminal Justice's Department of Security, Fire, and Emergency Management. Thank you both. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Senator. That's it for our show today. Joelle Schrock is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.